Episode 5 of the Dave Burke Podcast is here. Hello, everyone. It's August 14th, 2019, and we have another great podcast today after a foggy morning here in Southwest Ohio. We have two great guests today. Joining the Dave Burke Podcast will be Steve Robertson, publisher of JeansPage.com, who covers the Mississippi State Bulldogs. Steve also wrote the book Flim Flam, that caused great pain for the Ole Miss football program, and Steve has another book on the way. So we'll learn more about the Bulldogs and about Steve's upcoming book when we talk to him. We also welcome Middletown, Ohio Madison head coach Ricky Davis. Coach Davis is one, if not the youngest head football coaches in high school football at 25 years old. I've known Ricky since his high school playing days and look forward to catching up with him as we count down to the start of the 2019 season. We'll kick off the podcast after a word from our sponsor, First Star Logistics, and from Anchor. So stay with us.
Dave Lapham here, and every day I am grateful for my experience to have played professional football. As a player, I realize self-motivation, leadership, and appreciating your teammates are key. At First Star Logistics, you can use those same attributes to create the life you want for you and your family. Build your future by working hard, like I did. You'll see results both on and off the field. Call First Star Logistics today and be part of our winning team. Opportunity knocking.
We're back on the Dave Burke Podcast talking high school football in Southwest Ohio. We're joined by Ricky Davis, head coach, Middletown Madison High School. Ricky and I go back a long time, all the way back in the days when he played at Moeller and Middletown Fenwick. And Ricky, I've got to say, when I saw the news that you became the head coach at Middletown Madison, I'm not surprised, because even though you're 25 years old, you've always had the confidence, no matter when it came to the game of football.
I did. Yeah, I did. And I was fortunate enough to be around the right guys to kind of mold me into not only being a great player, but being a great leader as well. And it kind of translates to coaching. So coaching's kind of my avenue back to football now that football is over. My playing days are over.
You've had a chance now to mature all the way back. The one thing I always remember, we talked before we did this recording, I remember situations when you get to be my age, you're just good to remember anything. But the one thing I remember is a game when you was at Moeller and you were on the bench, and Moeller was struggling offensively, and you came in, and I think the very first play you threw a deep touchdown pass, and you just looked over to the sidelines and shrugged your shoulders and said, "Why am I on the sidelines?" I could read your mind. Have you found a player on your team yet that has that confidence?
Yeah, a few. I would say that, you know, that Ricky Davis is somebody that needed a talking to, right? Because the coach, you never do that to a coach. But the confidence is. I have a quarterback. I'm fortunate enough now to have a quarterback that has that kind of confidence. So it's good. It's really good.
You get a little bit of a taste of your own medicine.
A little bit, yeah.
And this is all good fun, because
come to Jesus moment sometimes.
Yeah, and I stress this is all good fun because you had talent, and there's no mistaking that you had talent. So and it was frustrating.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Covering the game, it was frustrating. You were one of those guys that was under recruited. And for whatever reason, but you ended up going to Youngstown State, and you had a nice career there. Maybe you may have wanted more, but you also fought some injuries.
Yeah. I had a pretty good career. My recruiting was, I had a few offers. I didn't really know the recruiting process too well, to be honest with you. Back when Derek Dooley was at Tennessee, I had visited Knoxville 5 or 6 times. They had come and visited my house twice, and you know, I was kind of waiting on that SEC offer, and I didn't know that these colleges take one quarterback per class. So, you know, the more I was waiting, the more I was losing. I had Bowling Green, Akron, Kent State, Western Kentucky, Army, UMass, just a couple smaller MAC schools, and all of them had commits. So it was down between UMass and Army. My mom wouldn't let me visit Army. She didn't want me to like it too much, and and be away from her for too long. But so it was down, really down between Youngstown and UMass, and went to Youngstown. Yeah, I was fortunate enough to have a great career. Played a little bit as a freshman, got in more my sophomore year, started my junior year, and then we went to the national championship. So I had a great career, played a lot my senior year too, but had a great career, and I definitely miss it, definitely miss it.
And I remember sitting there telling you in high school, what are you waiting for? What are you waiting for?
Yeah, I remember that very well. You were a good mentor for me because you had been around guys bigger recruitment. You hadn't seen, why is he waiting? Why is he waiting? And, you know, it was just, you know, it's funny though, Dave, it always seems to work out. You know, I wouldn't trade my years at Youngstown for anything though. So it did work out. So we're fortunate up there.
Looking back, what would you tell the young Ricky Davis, now all the stuff that you've learned over the last several years?
A few things. Probably, you know, don't worry too much about what people think. You know, one of the things that I was more concerned with was I wouldn't have transferred as many times as I did, to be honest with you, because I transferred from – I had the quarterback battle. I transferred to Fenwick and all that, and I already had my offers. And I know one thing, when I have a son myself, the transferring stuff is hard. I mean, it really is. It's hard to gain friends. It's hard to, you know, I'm in Moeller. I was driving an hour and a half to school every day. You know, we had lifting in the morning, and my mom, she worked at Middletown High School, and this is before I had my license. We were waking up at like 4 a.m. to go to school. So, and driving an hour down there, the main thing was I probably wouldn't have transferred. I probably would have stayed where I was. And then the other thing was just not worrying too much about people think. You know, I was so concerned of, I would just have more self-confidence in myself knowing that, you know, I'm a good player and I can get it done. But yeah, it was just a lot of growing up. You know, there's always this curve, and I see it a lot now as I'm a coach. There's always this curve that kids hit where they just kind of are done being immature. They're done being childish, and they hit that man phase. And it took me, it was my senior years when I finally hit that. But, yeah, I mean, it's a tough question. It really is a tough question because there'd probably be a few things I would change, to be honest with you.
25 years of age, one of the youngest head coaches in high school football, not in the only in the country. I believe the youngest in Ohio from what I'm hearing.
Yeah, yeah, youngest head football coach in Ohio.
Are people, you know, kind of scratching their head going, why would a high school hire a 25-year-old?
Yeah, I've gotten that a lot. You know, a lot of people, I've been mistaken for a player by some parents and stuff. You know, there's a lot of doubters. There's a lot of naysayers and stuff. But again, it goes back to that self-confidence that I know I've played at a really high level, and I know that I've been around high-level coaches, Bo Pelini, Jim Tressel, Stoops, Shane Montgomery, who was the former Miami head coach, and now he was the offensive coordinator at Youngstown with me. I've just been around a lot of big-time names, and they just taught me the game so well that, you know, when I'm the starting quarterback at West Virginia in front of 70,000 people, well, then going down to Division V high school football doesn't seem as hard. You know what I'm saying? So I just have the self-confidence in myself that I know I can get it done, you know, and I'm not too worried about what people think.
You're taking over a program known to run the wing tee.
Yeah.
You're a guy that likes to throw the football. How has that mixed together so far in the preseason?
Yeah, it's been tough. Just personnel-wise, you know, I really wanted to throw in the spread in the beginning of the year. And just personnel-wise, it didn't quite work out because just Division V, I mean, it's really hard, Dave. You know, I mean, you know, you've been around it. And so we actually went back to the wing tee, went back to the bread and butter, and we just are throwing more out of that. So we're finding ways to get guys in space, and we're still throwing the ball. It's just in the terms of putting the kids in the best position to be successful, we had to go back to the wing tee, unfortunately.
And you've got, you know, you talked about coaching mentors, and it's not like you don't have someone there in your own sidelines. I believe the former head coach is still on staff. He just didn't have time to do what he felt was the job as a full-time basis.
Yeah. Yeah. He was super busy. He was working at a steel mill and then coming, he would get off a full-time job and go to another full-time job, you know, and he's only getting paid for one of those. So after 5 years of doing that, not really seeing his family as much, he kind of accomplished everything he wanted to. You know, he was 2 games away from the state championship last year, and he's 1 game away two years ago. So, I mean, he, in terms of changing the culture in the program, he had already done that. And this was kind of his way of staying around the program and not having as much responsibility as he did. You know, it's nice to have him on staff, though, because me being a younger guy, he helps with a lot of stuff. I mean, he knows more people within this area. He knows more connections. You know, I've always been, like I said, Moeller, Fenwick, Youngstown. I lived in Texas for a little bit, but I don't know this area very well. So he's been extremely helpful. It's been good having him on staff.
You talked about the success the last couple seasons. Last season, a team that went 12-1, losing the third round of the playoffs to Wheelersburg. And I remember there was some controversy about that game. And I don't know if you even want to talk about that. But this season, you know, Division 5, Region 20, you're going to open the season playing up against Division 3 Franklin at home. And maybe talk about, you know, the expectations for this season.
Yeah, the expectations are still right where they were. You know, we lost 19 seniors. We had 7 freshmen come in. So we only have 49 guys. We hired an ugly 25-year-old coach, you know, so everyone's against us right now. But I don't know, Dave. I like fighting from underneath, you know, and it's one of those things. The expectations are right where they were. You know, we know we play a Division III Franklin. We play a Division IV Valley View Week 3. You know, we got a tough schedule. We got our work cut out for us. But, you know, it's one of them things that, you know, you can't really worry about it too much. You know, you just got to push forward, and I fully expect to win the league again this year.
We're talking to head coach Ricky Davis, Middletown Madison. Ricky, how excited are you for that season opener?
Yeah, I'm super excited. I'm ready for it to be here. You know, it's we got a lot of new changes. You know, we hopefully getting turf after this year, but I've brought in, we got Nike gear for the kids. You know, we've done a great job fundraising and all this stuff, but all that stuff isn't as exciting as when the season's finally here, you know, and we're kind of itching away. It's only two and a half weeks away. It's at home, fortunately. You know, this year we got a new tradition of the mascot is a Mohawk. The Mohawk's going to ride out on a horse and lead us out on the field, and just a lot of exciting things happening. And I'd say for that home opener, I'm about as excited as I've ever been around football, just because I've been the preparation's there. The kids are ready. You know, we realize going into that they think that they are going to just, you know, beat us up, and we're fully prepared. So we're ready to go, and I'm excited. I'm itching for it.
You lost a lot of talent from last season, not just on offense, but also defense. Talk about some of those players you expect to step forward this season.
Yeah, we only had 2 returning starters on each side of the ball. One was Noah Perry, who was the youngest of the group. He's an offensive lineman. And then Jake Phelps is a running back. And then defensively is Connor Blaylock. He's a cornerback, DB. And then Devonology is a junior, and he's going to be a linebacker. So really, we've had a bunch of open positions, you know, up for grabs for these younger guys to step up. And I'm feeling real confident. You know, we got a quarterback that's going to be a senior this year. The big 6'4", 200-pound guy, got a real strong arm. And, you know, he's kind of been itching himself to get into that quarterback position after playing after Mason, or after following Mason Whiteman, who had a lot of success. And this is finally his year to shine. Yeah, athletically, the thing is, everyone thinks we're down, man. If you were to see our practices, though, I mean, we got skill guys. It might be the best skill group to come through the school in a long time. I mean, we got some fast dudes. I'd say the offensive line is our biggest area that we're kind of progressing, or we're trying to progress in. Just the young guys. We got one senior, McCrayson Martin. He's still learning. You know, he's still kind of swimming sometimes with the mental side of the game. But, you know, for the most part, I think we're right back where we need to be. And, you know, I'm excited. I think personnel-wise, we're ready to go.
We've been talking with Ricky Davis, head coach, Middletown Madison High School. Ricky, I wish you all the best. I look forward to seeing how your team does this year. And, you know, you always have a fan in me. And anything we can ever do for you, you let us know.
I appreciate it, Dave. Thank you so much, man. I appreciate your coverage throughout all the years. You've always been one of the most respected guys, and I really appreciate it. Thanks for calling me.
Ricky Davis, head coach, Middletown Madison, here on the Dave Burke Podcast. Stay tuned for more. We're back on the Dave Burke Podcast. I am so excited to talk to this next guest. Steve Robertson and I go back to 2008 when we went to Miami, Florida, and covered the offense-defense All-American game in Miami for Scout.com. And Steve, a lot's changed since that first time we met. I've gained weight. You got longer hair, and you got more tattoos. So, I mean, let's dig into this, because you might be one of the most interesting stories in all of college football, in my opinion. And, you know, you're down there in Starkville, Mississippi, and while people down south understand SEC football, up here in Big Ten country where I'm located, I don't think they really get it, how big the rivalries in football can be, especially when we talk Mississippi State and Ole Miss.
Well, Dave, it's true. And I say, harkening back to that day in the Orange Bowl, I mean, you know, what a guess that was to, you know, guys like you and I that were alive in the 70s and remember those great Super Bowls down there. And that's one of the greatest memories of my career is you and I and Sonny Schiff and Miller Safford. I mean, we were able to cover the last game ever played in the old Orange Bowl. And I think that it's really cool. And we took some pictures together down there. And I remember just kind of walking around out there after the ball game, just kind of soaking it all in and letting the ghosts of Super Bowl's past kind of speak to me. And it was such a great experience. But, you know, Dave, I tell you, I don't look like the typical, you know, pretty boy in a polo shirt sports writer. That's not who I am. I played the role for many years, but it's one of those things now where anywhere that I travel in a Southeastern Conference, people know who I am, either because of my hair or because of the fact that it's part of my investigation for the book Flim Flam. Hugh Freeze ended up being quote, resigned of his duties there at Ole Miss. And so, yeah, it's a spirited rivalry down here, and I think in some ways I've probably added to some of its fervor.
You do a lot of stuff. One, you can be found on Twitter at Scout Steve R. You know, I encourage people, if you're a football fan, you got to follow Steve. I mean, it's you know, you have your own nickname, a.k.a. the Stark Villain, and you're a publisher at jeanspage.com on the 247 Sports Network. You have a podcast called The Boneyard. And as you said, you're an author. You wrote a book, Flim Flam, The Truth Behind the Blind Faith Culture That Led to the Explosive NCAA Investigation of Ole Miss Football. And I can tell people, this is not something new. This goes back. I did a podcast with you and Yancey Porter, who covered Ole Miss many years ago, and got hate mail emails from both sides. The how dare I speak to either one of you guys. So, I mean, I understand this rivalry maybe a little bit different than people up here in the Midwest, but you have a lot of things on your plate.
Yeah, I do. And I'll tell you, I'm finally, now that summer's over, finally able to kind of take a breath now that we're getting into football season. And you know how it is, Dave, when you cover football, you kind of get into the cycle. You know, there's the press conference on Monday. There's offensive interviews Tuesday, defense on Wednesday. Thursday, you kind of push the rest of your content out, and you go to a junior college game, and there's a high school game Friday. And so things become a lot more regimented. And so I just signed off on the final proof for book number two, which is entitled Stark Villains, and it is about the Mississippi State Ole Miss rivalry that actually dates back prior to the establishment of Mississippi State University, because before there were rivals, there was still a rivalry between social classes in the state of Mississippi. And that is just kind of carried forward through today. I mean, that is something that still exists in Mississippi today. And you talk about how spirited the rivalry is. You know, the very first Egg Bowl, which is what we call the, you know, the bowl game, the rivalry game between State and Ole Miss, the battle for the golden egg, the very first one was delayed over half an hour because Ole Miss was protesting that Mississippi State had a former Ole Miss player on their roster and felt it was an unfair advantage that he might know some of their plays. And so State sat the guy and won the game 20-0 anyway. And so it's been contentious from the beginning, but it's one of those things, too, that I feel like is a story that needs to be told from Mississippi State perspective. And so looking forward to that book coming out. It'll be out sometime next month. And it's just, you know, now the football season's here, Dave. I think I'm glad to get that stuff behind me, but I'm excited to be on the road again for the book tour and traveling around the Southeast and getting to see Bulldog fans and fans of college football as we do the book tour.
Well, let's talk about this edition of the Mississippi State Bulldogs. Last season, 8-5 under a new head coach, Joe Moorhead. Dan Mullen left for Florida. Moorhead was, you know, came in being known for his offensive mind, was one of the top coordinators in college football, but the Bulldogs struggled on offense in 2018. And do you see that continuing in 2019?
Well, you know, we've had probably, I guess, 10 practice sessions, and we've been able to attend, I think, 7 or 8 of those. And, you know, some of the issues with last year really kind of centered around the fact that Joe Moorhead is trying to kind of run the Joe Moorhead system with a personnel group, especially at quarterback, that was recruited to run a Dan Mullen offense. And so there were some growing pains. I mean, you had Nick Fitzgerald here, who is the all-time SEC leader in rushing yards for a quarterback. Well, that's the Dan Mullen scheme. It's a run-first scheme. We saw it with Tim Tebow, you know, saw it to a certain extent with Cam Newton and Dak Prescott. I mean, that's what Dan does. Well, Joe's a little different. He wants the quarterback to kind of run just enough to keep the defense honest, and he wants to chuck it down the field. Well, you didn't have really that pass-happy quarterback in Nick Fitzgerald, and so there was kind of a clash in styles. And so you had a run-first quarterback playing for a pass-first play caller, and so there were some growing pains. I mean, you look at some games, I mean, they absolutely destroyed Arkansas 52-6. You blow out Ole Miss 35-3. But then you look at the LSU, Florida, and Alabama games, you know, games where you're facing some very talented elite defenses, and Joe and his group struggled to move the football. And he and I spoke about that recently, and he says, you know, it really all goes back to the ability to throw the football down the field. Because of the fact, when you can make the throw down the field and keep those safeties honest and keep them out of the box, well, then all of a sudden that opens up your running game because the numbers are to your advantage. And so what was happening last year is because the opponents knew Mississippi State couldn't connect down the field, they would walk a safety down and force the quarterback to run. And Nick Fitzgerald ran the football 211 times last year, which is astronomical for a quarterback in this day and time, outside of maybe running a triple option. And so it's going to be a little more similar to what Joe ran at Penn State with James Franklin and Nittany Lyons, you know, with Trace McSorley. They got Tommy Stevens in, a grad transfer. He's been a breath of fresh air. Not that Keaton Thompson hadn't done a good job for Mississippi State, but he was recruited to run a different scheme, so the skill set's a little different. But we're seeing better wide receiver play. You got a junior college transfer, Javonte Payton, they're very excited about, and then a grad transfer from Kansas State, Isaiah Zuber, a guy that's a former Big 12, all Big 12 guy. So those two guys have come in and really kind of transformed that wide receiver room. So we are seeing some better production in the passing game, which should open up a lot more things offensively.
Steve, when I was doing my research on Mississippi State, one thing I saw, the defense, they got to replace, it looked like from what I saw, 8 starters that included 3 high NFL draft picks. I mean, how is Coach Moorhead addressing that side of the ball?
Well, the defensive front, that's really where your issues lie. I mean, the back seven of this defense is really, really solid. And you know, everybody knows Jonathan Abram now from Hard Knocks, first-round draft pick by the Oakland Raiders. He's actually from my hometown of Columbia, Mississippi. So I've known of John since he was a freshman in high school. But, you know, you don't replace a guy like Jeffrey Simmons or Montez Sweat easily. The good thing for Mississippi State, as far as the defensive ends go, is you've got a lot of experience there. It is a veteran group, and they substituted rather liberally the last couple of years. So it's not like you're starting fresh. You've got some guys out there like Chauncey Rivers is a guy that he was one of the stars of Last Chance U the second year that it was at East Mississippi. And he was a guy last year that actually had more quarterback pressures per snap than anybody else on the team. So you'll see his snap count go up as a starter this year. They're really excited about the linebackers, and they believe they've got as good a linebacker unit as anybody in the Southeastern Conference. Errol Thompson's a preseason All-SEC guy. Leo Lewis, a 5-star linebacker. out of high school, has really kind of found his currency with Chris Marv, new linebacker coach that came in from Vanderbilt. And then in the back seven, they actually think they're going to be better in the secondary this year than they were a year ago, despite the fact they lost Jonathan Abram, because two of the fastest players on a team, Brian Cole and Jaquarius Landrews, both competed last year to be the starter at nickel. Well, they're both going to be on the field this year, one playing nickel, the other playing strong safety. And you've got Cam Dantzler, a Jim Thorpe award candidate as a boundary corner. And then on the field corner, you've got Mari Smitherman. And last year, when he was inserted into the starting lineup, that's when things really began to change for Mississippi State. And so they're optimistic about the defense being really good. I don't know that they'll be elite. I don't think they're going to challenge for the top overall defense like they did a year ago, because they're just not quite as strong up front, especially defensive tackle. A lot of talent there. They've recruited exceptionally well, just kind of thin on experience.
We're talking with Steve Robertson of JeansPage.com on the 247 Sports Network, who covers Mississippi State. And, you know, when I was looking at things concerning the Bulldogs, it looks like there's, you know, no pressure there, because it looks like people are expecting this team to be bowl eligible. But it looks like they're picking them to kind of finish like around the fifth spot in the SEC, West. This schedule, I look at this schedule. It opens on Saturday, August 31st against Louisiana, the Raging Cajuns down in New Orleans. But this home schedule, Kentucky, LSU, Alabama, and the rival, the Egg Bowl, Ole Miss, but the away games, Auburn, Tennessee, Texas A&M. Talk about this schedule and how you feel this team can progress throughout the season.
Well, I think if I had to call it right now, I think an 8-4 is probably the best prediction if they can win a toss-up game. And I believe those games on the road at A&M and Auburn are toss-up games. State beat both of those opponents last year here, and actually – it's one of the things I think is kind of a burr in the Bulldog saddle is every year the SEC media and the prognosticators always seem to want to throw A&M ahead of Mississippi State. But if you look at recent years in the series, Mississippi State has dominated the rivalry. Mississippi State has absolutely owned Texas A&M, but yet every year A&M gets picked ahead of Mississippi State. And I think a lot of people look at that game and say, okay, listen, we won that game last year and really left a lot of points on the field. And they feel like, hey, when we go down there, we've got a chance to win that game. I think the Tennessee game is one. I'm not convinced at this point that Tennessee's ready to take the next step. And it's such an unforgiving league, the SEC, that if you get down, nobody's going to do you any favors and let you up. I expect State to win that game on the road. I think that's a big one. I just don't think Tennessee has the athletes on offense to score with State. But Alabama's a tough one coming in. LSU last year, I think Mississippi State feels like they should have played a little bit better. I mean, they held LSU to 13 points last year. Not going to be the same team, either one of them. But if they can win one of those toss-up games, and possibly it's a 9-3 regular season, you win a bowl game, ends up being a 10-win year, and I think everybody would be overjoyed with that. But I think the smart money right now is on the Bulldogs going 8-4.
Who's your pick to win the SEC overall? You pick each division, the East and the West. Who do you see as the top dog in each one?
I love this Georgia team, and I know a lot of people. People say, "Well, that's an easy pick." I think Florida will challenge. I just don't think that Dan Mullen at this point has the talent on campus in Gainesville to really compete with Georgia hat on a hat. I think Georgia. I love Swift. Love Jake Fromm. I think they've got the offensive skill. I think they're good enough to win the national championship. It's just be a matter of can they figure some things out on defense? Can they do just enough? They should have won the SEC outright last year. We all know this. They fake the punt there, doesn't work out, and Alabama cashes in. I expect Alabama to win the West. I think Tua being back, one of the best quarterbacks in the country. They were so prolific last year on offense, and that was the game, too. I think a lot of people began to really respect Mississippi State because of how much they slowed Alabama down last year offensively. But that's a group that's going to return Jerry Jeudy and Ruggs and those guys. They're going to be able to run and throw on just about anybody. So I see another Georgia-Alabama rematch. But this year, I'm going to take Georgia. I think Georgia will figure it out. I think they'll find a way. I think last year's disappointment – will be the impetus they need to get over the hump and win the SEC and get into the FBS playoff.
Steve Robertson here joining us on the Dave Burke Podcast. Steve, I want to get back to the book Flim Flam. I know early on when you were working on that book, a lot of things were kind of, you know, happening with Ole Miss football. How has life changed for you with that book, leading up to that book coming out, and then after it came out, and as the truth came out, and people started learning that, hey, this guy down there in Starkville, Mississippi, kind of knew what he was talking about.
Well, it's funny, you know, in the days leading up to Hugh Freeze's resignation, if that's what we want to call it, that was July 20th, and I would say, you know, those weeks leading into that, you know, life around me was pretty interesting. You know, threatened with lawsuits. I mean, every day you walk to the mailbox, you just, you know, you're hoping you don't get a letter from some attorney wanting to question you about stuff. And had some death threats, had people try to get my wife fired from her job. I mean, it was, you know, it's something you would expect from a John Grisham movie. I mean, you know, it was just, it was insane and very, very stressful. But, you know, had some people that had some death threats and ended up having to file criminal reports and all that stuff. And I remember something my wife said, and I'll never forget this. And I had to go tell her about it at that point. You know, it's one of those things you kind of shield your family from the ugly side of all this as best you can. But when you feel like there's some credible threats, you need to share it with your family. And so I remember telling her that. And you know, she got a little emotional and she said, you know what? She goes, you have to finish this book. If not, it's all for nothing. And that was right. So I went ahead and finished the deal. And then when, you know, when Hugh Freeze resigned, I don't think my phone stopped ringing for about 2 weeks. And, you know, Sports Illustrated comes to Starkville, ESPN comes to Starkville. And I finally got to a point where I just simply couldn't handle all of the demands for radio shows and that kind of stuff, because everybody wanted to have you on. And you know, you want to be able to get to everybody and you don't want to snub anybody. But, you know, then when you've got every small town radio station in the Southeast, you know, trying to get you together, it becomes a little, it's a different level of stress. But the bigger part of it is just the vindication of it all, because I had said for 2 years, there was a major story brewing. The in-state media was essentially complicit in the cover-up. And that's one thing I point out in the book, they were either incompetent or they were complicit. And I'll let the readers determine for themselves which one it was. But once it all happened, and once Freeze was gone, and then the NCAA sanctions came down, the threats went away. There's always going to be some keyboard cowboys on social media that have something to say. But by and large, a lot of that stress just kind of disappeared. And so I was really able to get out and kind of enjoy the book tour. You know, every so often you have somebody come by and make a little comment, but nothing I can't live with. But it's a different day and time now. I mean, you know, it's like I go cover baseball games on the road in the spring, and you go to Florida, go to Gainesville, and you spend the whole weekend. You know, once they figure out who you are, because not everybody looks like me, and you show up down there, and then everybody's like, oh, aren't you the guy? Yeah, I'm the guy, you know. So then you have to explain all that, and you spend the whole weekend. So it's not like I can go to Walmart anymore and just kind of hang out, you know. I mean, it's like even nowadays when I go on the road in Starkville, a lot of these people kind of see me all the time, so it's not a big deal. But anytime that I go shopping anywhere around the state of Mississippi, it becomes a deal where I got to take pictures, you know, and I don't mind any of that. And it's something I've learned to live with now, but, my life is a whole lot different than it was, say, 2 years ago, just because of the fact that this is the biggest scandal in the history of Mississippi sports. And, I was a central figure in that and actually found the evidence that, that led to the fall of Coach Hugh Freeze at Ole Miss. And, you know, that's something, looking back on it, I don't know that that will ever leave me. I think that is something that, you know, it's one of those things, just kind of part of your professional legacy. And I'm actually pretty proud of the journalism that I use to kind of bring all that to bear.
Steve, I have to ask this question. You had the story on Ole Miss. Overall, how bad is college football, in your opinion, as far as programs out there kind of being a little rogue?
Well, it's one of those things too. It's I don't know if you can call it rogue, because there's so many. There's no shortage of people that are willing to help their team gain a competitive advantage, and it's not just limited to Ole Miss, not just limited to the SEC. And I tell people all the time when I go on these speaking engagements, people say, "Hey, tell us what's really going on with so and so. What do you know about this?" And I tell people, I said, "You really don't want to know the full truth, And they said, well, really, why is that? I said, because then you won't be able to enjoy college football anymore. Because it's kind of like going to see, you know, how they make hot dogs. You know, it's like, or going to see how they make the sausage. You know, it's better to just put it on the grill and enjoy it than rather go see the process behind it. Because the business of college football behind the scenes is not always a tidy undertaking. And so, and Dave, you know what, you hear all these things in our coverage and that sort of stuff, and stories pop up and you hear about, you know, this school's got this booster, this kid's got his hand out. And, you know, a lot of that stuff is just internet rumor, but there is some truth to some of that too, that some of that stuff is true. There's some fire to the smoke. And so I don't think that at any point there's any program that is immune, but the biggest issue facing college athletics is not coaches and it's not kids. It's these guys that are out there that want to be involved, and they think that if they can do one thing to help their school get over the edge, and that's where schools have to be vigilant, is booster involvement. And as we saw with Ole Miss, you know, they weren't even really trying to provide any distance between the prospects and the boosters. And one of the things that it's in the documents, and it's also covered in the book, is on game day, Ole Miss would have boosters in the football complex while recruits are there on unofficial visits. And that's an absolute no-no. And so I've been other places, and, you know, if you're a member of the media and if you get within earshot of a prospect, there's somebody coming over there saying, hey, do we need to pull your credential, or are you going to leave these guys alone? Whether you're asking them a question or not, and you go a situation like that, and they've got boosters in the football complex. And so a lot of it's just kind of common sense stuff, but nobody needs to be naive and think, oh yeah, well, that only happens with the bad programs. I mean, there's just so many people that are involved in the process who don't need to be, that every school is at risk at some point.
We've been talking with Steve Robertson, AKA the Stark Villain. Steve, tell people about you. You said you got a new book coming out. Where will that be available? When? And tell them how they can get a hold of Flim Flam if it's something they have not seen or would like to read.
Yeah, so you should be able to get Flim Flam at Amazon. And if they're not out again, it's like now that the new book is coming out, there's been another run on Flim Flam. So we're starting to see more of that. And we'll have a website active here pretty soon, StarkVillainTheBook.com, where people can go order both books, but also, you know, and you'll be able to buy it online, and most great bookstores in the Southeast will carry it. But if people want to buy it online, that's the best place to go, is StarkVillain.com, StarkVillainTheBook.com. But it covers 8 decades of Mississippi State athletics, and it really goes back to even, you know, the beginning of it all. And some of my favorite stories in the book is we're actually students and not players or coaches. I interviewed Jackie Sherrill and Coach Bob Tyler, Coach Ron Polk. I mean, guys that are kind of pillars in the Mississippi State family. But some of my favorite stories are students. In 1946, I interviewed a 93-year-old man. He was part of this caper in 46 where they flew over to Oxford in a J-3 Cub airplane and did some redecorating of Ole Miss football field and stadium the day before the Egg Bowl. And he's finally told that story, you know, after all these years, because his co-conspirator died. And another story is about two students stole the golden egg. And it was just a wild ride that the egg went on, because they were trying to prevent Ole Miss from defacing the trophy over some forfeits. And so it goes all the way back to the 40s, and it runs through this past football season. And it's been one of the greatest joys of my life to interview many of these great players and coaches that have been such a great part of Mississippi State traditions in multiple sports, including Morgan William. And she is famous as the young lady that hit the shot to beat UConn to snap their streak and knock them out at NCAA tournament, probably the biggest shot in women's college basketball history. And so she talks about that game. And then what's interesting is their class, that senior class, was the first senior class in Mississippi State women's basketball history to never lose to Ole Miss. And so an interesting distinction there. And so we just go through all that stuff and let everybody tell their stories and let them talk about their memories from the rivalry. And it's been a wonderful thing.
We've been talking with Steve Robertson from jeanspage.com on the 247 Network. And Steve, we could talk so much more, because there is so much more about you as a person, as a person who has covered football, recruiting and stuff in the state of Mississippi. But, We appreciate the time you've taken to be on the Dave Burke podcast, and wish you the best on the new book, and hope to talk to you or catch up to you soon.
Sounds great, Dave. You guys take care.
Here at First Star, we recognize that our employees and their commitment are what drive our success. Our management and training team really invests in our employees. We give each person the tools and support they need, provide them access to an unsaturated customer base, and help them achieve the successful career they envision. At First Star, we take care of our employees with double the commission rates of our competitors and a flexible career path. We hope you'll come be a part of it. Opportunity
knocking. We're back on the Dave Burke Podcast with our final thoughts. Ohio State is taking a few hits from the media as the university has filed an application to trademark the word "the," or depending on how you use it, "the." The move was made as the university is looking to trademark the phrase "the Ohio State University" on shirts, hats, and more. I have a feeling that's not going to happen. Cincinnati Bearcats head coach Luke Fickell has no love for Michigan. Being a former Ohio State Buckeye, the Bearcats head coach gave his thoughts on the role he felt Michigan played in transfer James Hudson having his eligibility waiver declined by the NCAA. Now it seems Michigan head coach Jim Harbaugh felt he had to throw his two cents in, saying the NCAA and not the university had anything to do with transfer waivers. From what I've seen over the years, information from the player's former school does play a role. Either way, the NCAA failed Hudson and his claim of depression. Give the kid the benefit of the doubt. Talking of transfers, former Ohio State quarterback Tate Martell learned the grass is not always greener on the other side. This week, Miami head coach Manny Diaz announced Martell would not be the Hurricanes' starting quarterback, despite what many thought would happen once he left the Buckeyes for the Hurricanes. Episode number 5 of the Dave Burke Podcast is over. We hope you enjoyed our guest, Ricky Davis, head football coach at Middletown, Ohio Madison High School, and Steve Robertson of jeanspage.com of the 247 Network. If you would like to support the Dave Burke Podcast, you can pledge a monthly recurring amount by clicking on the Support This Podcast button. Also, if you would like to leave us a short message, you can leave a voicemail up to a minute long by clicking the Send Voice Message button. Until next time, this is Dave Burke.